Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, the Karma train is chugging into the station. It's a big, beautiful locomotive. Sort of inspires awe as it pulls in. Clear Channel Communications this week announced a decision to cut some 1,850 jobs, almost 10% of the company's workforce nationwide. I have nothing against the employees of Clear Channel. It's going to save the company a reported $400 million. Most jobs dropped, and this is where it gets karmic, ladies and gentlemen. For those of you who remember way back last summer, when Clear Channel's billboard department refused to allow a certain host of a certain radio program to purchase some billboards to advertise the CD because they found the cover art inappropriate. Now, here we are, January 2009, a scant 6 months later. Hear the whistle? It's the whistle of the Karma train. Most jobs dropped are in ad sales and the billboard department. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeedly-doodly. News of nuclear waste, ladies and gentlemen, because it's too cheap to be safe. An old glass jar inside a beaten-up old safe at the bottom of a waste pit may seem an unlikely place to find a pivotal piece of 20th-century history, but that's just where the first batch of weapons-grade plutonium ever made has been found, abandoned at the world's oldest nuclear processing site. Why would you want to take care of that? It's just plutonium. The most toxic material known to man. But, you know, we don't know all the toxic materials. We're just man. The potentially dangerous find was made at Hanford, Washington State, the site of the nuclear reservation established in 1943. Hanford made the plutonium for the first ever nuclear weapons test in July of 1945. Just 3.5 weeks later, more Hanford plutonium was used in the nuclear strike on Nagasaki. But sloppy work by the contractors running the site, this is from New Scientist, saw all kinds of chemical and radioactive waste indiscriminately buried in pits underground over the 40 years Hanford was operational, earning it the accolade of the dirtiest place on Earth. Speaking of which, isn't it a lovely irony that the network that decided to put a show on the air called Lie to Me, Lie to Me, is Fox. Back to the nuclear waste. In 2004, cleanup work uncovered a battered, rusted, and broken old safe containing a glass jug inside which was 400 milliliters of plutonium. That's jug plutonium. That's the best. Recent tests at the Pacific Northwest National Laboratory have shown this plutonium was the first ever processed at the site, the first made on a usable scale anywhere in the world. Trawling through records at Hanford helped the team realize the historical significance of their find. Plutonium, by the way, has a half-life of only 24,110 years. It is most dangerous when inhaled as a dry powder, where its decay in the lungs can cause cancer. So nice work, sloppy contractors. Nice work, all y'all. Take the rest of the day off. I think you already did. Now, ladies and gentlemen.
High def, low def, no def, take my hand. It's a digital wonderland. Got to be so careful where you stand. In the digital wonderland.
Oh, it's getting more wondrous every day. Clay writes, Dear Harry, I attended the inauguration and was amazed to see that every single jumbotron used during the entire 3 days of events were out of sync by about 3 seconds, and yet no one seemed to complain or even care. 3 seconds is so brutally bad, I'd love to know how that vendor ever won the jumbotron bid, and whoever it is, they shouldn't be paid. If 3 seconds doesn't seem to bother folks, I can't imagine the frame or two of sync issues that seem to be inherent in digital cable will bother more than a select few. That's just shameful. No, it's just digital. Speaking of which, the Sacramento area is among the least prepared for the switch to digital only television on February 7th, according to the Nielsen people, well, they got to be right. They do the ratings. If the switch were to occur today, an estimated 7.3% of Sacramento, Stockton, Modesto households would lose all TV. Aww. That's where the state capital of California is. They shouldn't be watching TV. They should be working. The area ranks 10th worst among the 56 television markets that Nielsen gauges with electronic meters. The least ready for the digital switchover is Albuquerque and Santa Fe, New Mexico, treated as one area, with 12.2% of households completely unprepared for the switch. What are they doing there? You know. Most prepared is Hartford and New Haven, Connecticut. All right. But, on the other hand, Republicans, in the Senate at least, appear to be signing on to a plan to delay the digital changeover. That's right. Somebody on a radio show you may sometimes listen to kind of expressed skepticism a long time ago that February 2009 would actually stick. And now here it is. Senate Republicans have agreed to a plan that would push the transition to June 12th. They were initially hesitant to support the delay. However, after a little negotiation and some amendments, Republicans are now on board. Democratic Senator Jay Rockefeller, chairman of the Senate Commerce Committee, announced plans along with another Democrat for a bill that would push the switch from analog to digital signals from February 17th to June 12th, even though the head of the FCC under Bush argued that changing the date would cause consumer confusion. That's right. We don't have any of that now. The DTV Delay Act retains the June 12th turnover date, but allows stations to switch to digital before that date. In the event that it does switch early, the spectrum that it used to use for analog will be made available to public safety officials to rescue people who are despondent because they can't get TV. And it allows consumers with expired coupons for those converter boxes to apply for replacement coupons, which they couldn't do before, and extends the deadline to apply for a coupon from March 31st to July 31st. Quote, the way I see it right now, we have a choice. We can do the DTV transition right, or we can do it wrong, says Senator Rockefeller. But the shameful truth is we are only weeks away from doing it dreadfully wrong and leaving consumers with the consequences. The consequences? It's a digital wonderland. Hello, welcome to the show.
Inside my car, got pictures, got candy. I'm a lovable man. Take you to the nearest star. I'm your vehicle, baby. I'll take you anywhere you wanna go. I'm your vehicle, woman. My night, I'll show you love that I love you. I need you. I want you, got to have your child. Great God in heaven, you know I love you. Movie star, I'm gonna take you to Hollywood. But if you wanna stay just like you are, you know I think you really should. I'm your vehicle, baby. I'll take you anywhere you wanna go. I'm your vehicle, woman. By now I'll show you know that I love you, I need you, I want you, got to have your child. Great God in heaven, you know I love you. Hop inside my car. I got pictures, candy, I'm a lovable man. Take
take you to the nearest star. I'm your vehicle, babe. Take you anywhere you wanna go. I'm your vehicle, woman. And you know I love you. Ooh, and I'm your vehicle, baby. Oh, don't you know I love you?
Love
I
you.
Need you. I want you, got to have your child. Great God in heaven, you know I love you. Great God in heaven, you know I love you.
But we really didn't know until Sunday morning that Harry was probably going to be okay.
Harry is okay. Thanks, Dick. I really appreciate the thought. From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, with a little taste of Chicago right there, I'm Harry Shearer welcoming you to this very edition of the show. And you probably heard that Barack Obama chose, in an abundance of caution, so the statement said, to retake the oath of office that both he and Supreme Court Justice John Roberts mangled and scrambled at the inauguration on Tuesday, despite, probably because of their repeated practices and rehearsals. You know, you can rehearse too much. So anyway, they in an abundance of caution, because the bloggers were hammering them that he's not really the president, you know, they regathered at the White House on Wednesday of this week, this past week, and Roberts, Chief Justice Roberts, re-administered the oath to Barack Obama. Now, you know that. The little detail that sort of sneaked by under the radar was that for this redo, this do-over, as George Bush used to call it, they did not use a Bible. Barack Obama did not have his hand on the Bible as he took the oath the second time. And the reason given for that, which also kind of just went right by folks, was they couldn't find one in the White House. Now, you remember when the Clintons cleaned out and the Bush people came in and complained? They took the W's off the computer keyboards. So it's sort of pranky. But apparently the Bush people took, I don't know how many Bibles were in the White House, but they took them all out. They cleaned them out, took the Bibles away. You could go into the cheesiest hotel in Washington, D.C., and you'd find a Bible. But thanks to the cleanup crew, not at the White House. Me, I'd rather do without the W's myself. Well, I don't know. It depends. Depends how many words, there's one, you use with W's in them. But you can always take the W's out of the Bible, too. Now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. Those White House Bibles show up on eBay, though. There's going to be heaven to pay. From the London newspaper, The Independent, the Vatican has stirred a diplomatic maelstrom. Be a good name for a band, wouldn't it? Is there a band called Maelstrom? Sure should be. When it announced, this is the Vatican, it announced that it had lifted the excommunication of four rebel bishops, including the British Holocaust denier Richard Williamson. The decree repealing the 20-year-old Vatican punishment was signed on Wednesday by Cardinal Giovanni Battista Re. This coincided with the broadcast on Swedish state television of an interview with Williamson in which he, the breakaway bishop, once again denied the Holocaust. "I believe there were no gas chambers," he said. "I think that 200,000 to 300,000 Jews perished in Nazi concentration camps, but none of them by gas chambers. There was not one Jew killed by the gas chambers. It was all lies, lies, lies," unquote, Williamson, who is rector of the Seminary of Our Lady Co-Redemptrix in La Reja, Argentina. He has also endorsed the protocols of the Elders of Zion, a notorious anti-Semitic forgery, and claimed the Jews are bent on world domination. He supports conspiracy theories on the assassination of President Kennedy and the attacks on the Twin Towers, and has accused the Vatican of being under the power of Satan. The Vatican's decision comes at a time of heightened sensitivity in its dealings with Israel following the bloodshed in Gaza. The head of the Vatican press office, Father Federico Lombardi, said there was no connection whatsoever between Williamson's views and the decision to lift his excommunication. Vatican Radio pointed out Williamson's statements had been severely condemned by other members of the priestly fraternity of St. Pius X, the breakaway organization founded by the archbishop who consecrated the bishop in Switzerland. Bishop Bernard Fellay, it's unfortunate, the head of the fraternity and another of the rebel bishops readmitted into the church, said the TV interview was an attempt to defame the organization. Speaking of Israel, from the Times of London, owned by Rupert Murdoch, after weeks of denying that it used white phosphorus in the heavily populated Gaza Strip, Israel has finally admitted that the weapon was deployed in its recent offensive, now over. The Army's use of white phosphorus, which makes a distinctive shell burst of dozens of smoke trails, was reported first by the Times of London on January 5, when it was strenuously denied by the Israeli Army. Now, in the face of mounting evidence and international outcry, Israel has backtracked on that initial denial. Yes, phosphorus was used, but not in any illegal manner, Yigal Palmore, a foreign ministry spokesman, said. Some practices could be illegal, but we are going into that. The Israeli Defense Forces is holding an investigation concerning one specific incident. Unquote. Of course they're investigating themselves. We taught them that, didn't we? The incident in question is thought to be the firing of phosphorus shells at a UN school in the northern Gaza Strip on January 17th. The weapon is legal if used as a smokescreen in battle, but it is banned from deployment in civilian areas. Pictures of that specific attack show Palestinian medics fleeing as blobs of burning phosphorus rain down on the compound. A senior army official also admitted that shells containing phosphorus had been used in Gaza, but said they were used to provide a smokescreen. Now to Afghanistan. The British newspaper The Independent quotes the former Liberal Democrat leader, that's the third party in Britain, but he's become a sort of international figure since the days when he was known politically and domestically as Paddy Pantsdown. Now he's Lord Ashdown. He's accused ministers of the British government of wasting the lives of British soldiers killed in Afghanistan, claiming the international community does not have a plan to bring peace to Afghanistan. Lord Ashdown issued a grim warning that the scandal of inadequate planning threatened NATO's ability to take advantage of victories over the Taliban. He'd once been an UN representative of Afghanistan, in Afghanistan, said that insufficient military and aid resources had been committed to that country. He warned that a resolution of its problems would not be reached without better international coordination and an agreement involving major powers. He added, quote, I fear that we are now, and it is a scandal, wasting the lives of our young men and women whom we are putting in the front line in the most difficult circumstances when our political leaders have failed to produce any kind of plan that can take advantage of the victories they win over the Taliban at great cost. Period. Yes, he's the lord of run-on sentences. Quoting him again, if you speak to senior commanders in Afghanistan, you will find they are saying the same thing. They are winning the battle, often at great cost, in death and mutilation of our soldiers, but I'm afraid to say the international community has failed to take advantage of the victories they have gained. He says the international community was trying to stabilize Afghanistan with 1/25th of the military personnel and 1/50th of the aid it committed to Bosnia. Remember Bosnia? Little old Bosnia. From McClatchy newspapers, the top Marine commander says his forces, the top U.S. Marine commander, says his forces have already begun pulling equipment out of Iraq and that nearly all of his troops could be out in as little as 6 months. The time is right for the Marines to leave Iraq, says General James Conway, the commandant of the Marine Corps. Any sustainment force in Iraq, he said, will almost exclusively be from the Army. Nice work. Blame them if it goes bad. Hey, when we left, it was cool. The Marine withdrawal from Iraq is one of many efforts to shift forces from Iraq to Afghanistan. Conway said he didn't want to maintain a large Marine presence in Iraq when the military is expected to send as many as 20,000 more Marines to Afghanistan. Nearly all of them will be stationed in the south, where most of the nation's opium poppy crop is produced. Much of it sold to pay for Taliban stuff. Conway said he didn't want Marines fighting both wars because of the strain that would impose on his forces. Didn't hurt the army. From the Independent in London, President Obama is facing warnings that the U.S. risks repeating some of its errors in Iraq as the new administration turns to Afghanistan. Having received a briefing on his first day in office from General Petraeus, Obama is preparing to meet his military chiefs. There are fears that this could become a U.S. war rather than a NATO war, says Christopher Langton of the International Institute of Strategic Studies in London, with other NATO members already planning to scale back. The Dutch, I believe, have announced they're leaving Afghanistan at the end of the year. The U.S. could find itself isolated. Rather than being an international operation, it would become another coalition of the willing, as in Iraq. Though with the crucial difference that the Afghan mission has had a United Nations mandate throughout. In Afghanistan, where warlords were enlisted to overthrow the Taliban and still control large parts of the country, it's feared that creating yet more private armies, the way we did in Iraq, would simply worsen chronic lawlessness. 2 years ago, a similar scheme to form an auxiliary police force had to be shelved as soon as they were issued a uniform and a weapon. Many recruits began preying on local people. A pilot scheme in a province south of Kabul has become bogged down in arguments over who will control the militias, who will pay them, and how they should be armed. The U.S. ambassador is adamant Washington will provide training in uniforms, but not arms. The Interior Ministry suggested the men might be issued with repaired old and broken guns. None of this, says a security analyst, suggests fighting units to take on insurgents like the Anbar Awakening in Iraq, but rather armed men who have the scope to get up to mischief if they get authority. And on a related issue, from the Telegraph, British newspaper. As President Barack Obama declared his intention to close Guantanamo Bay, he made no mention of another growing U.S.-run prison with more than twice as many inmates and an even murkier legal status. More than 600 detainees are held at the U.S. Bagram internment facility in Afghanistan, known as the Other Guantanamo. Not only are there no plans to close it, but it's in the process of being expanded to hold 1,100 illegal enemy combatants. You know, Osama's got a new driver. Prisoners who cannot see lawyers, have no trials, and never see any evidence there may be against them. Like Guantanamo, since opening, Bagram has had men, held men, which the U.S. military says must be kept off the battlefield. According to human rights lawyers, the prison also holds scores of innocent people, many seized after tip-offs from feuding tribal rivals. The alleged offenses are never tested in court. The prison has been accused of torturing detainees, and two men were allegedly beaten to death there in 2002. The U.S. Army does not let outsiders in to view conditions inside. Some prisoners are released each month or handed over to Afghan custody, but many are thought to have been at Bagram for years. I think what Obama has inherited is a larger scale problem than just Guantanamo. Bagram makes the farce of justice at Guantanamo look a lot closer to due process, says the executive director of the International Justice Network. One of the most powerful arguments against military prisons is that they have outraged Afghans and fueled the insurgency. All right, then. And finally, news from outside the bubble. A Fiat car, IKEA furniture, hair removal cream, two smiling dolls. This is from The Guardian of London. And a tablet for indigestion have no obvious connection. But that has not deterred marketing executives across the world from capitalizing on the presidential brand this week in barely disguised attempts to cash in on the Obama moment and use it to help sell products. The global reach of Obama's message is making both subliminal and not so subtle appearances in controversial advertising campaigns from Washington to Jakarta, Indonesia. There's the new flavor of Ben & Jerry's ice cream, Yes Pecan. I guess you'd have to say Yes Pecan. A new Hennessy Cognac with 44, Obama's the 44th president, on the label. There's even an Indonesian commercial for a form of indigestion tablets featuring an Obama lookalike. A hair removal company in Britain, Veet, had an ad on Tuesday, Inauguration Day, with the words, Goodbye Bush. Pepsi has unveiled a new red, white, and blue logo, which has an apparent resemblance to Obama's campaign sunrise motif, as part of a longer advertising campaign centered on themes of optimism and renewal. It's bolstered with Obama-sounding slogans such as, Yes, you can, and choose change, in a campaign with a consistent theme of optimism that mirrors the current social climate, according to Pepsi. But in response to a question from the newspaper, Pepsi denied any links with Obama, suggesting parallels were coincidental. Well, advertisers lie, don't they? Do they? Marketing experts, in any case, warn that attempts to latch onto the Obama brand are potentially hazardous. They say it risks seeming gratuitous. The head of Saatchi Worldwide, a huge advertising agency, says Obama is without doubt the world's leading brand. It can backfire, though. That much was clear when the makers of the popular Beanie Babies dolls, Tie Inc., was forced to perhaps withdraw their newest dolls after Michelle Obama expressed her dissatisfaction at the promotion of the two new dolls named Sweet Sasha and Marvelous Malia. The company says the dolls are not supposed to refer to President Obama's daughters. There's nothing on the dolls that refers to the Obama girls, says the company's spokeswoman. Despite an admission to the Chicago Sun-Times that the dolls were indeed inspired by the daughters. But advertisers lie, don't they? Where did I get that impression? Anyway, the memorabilia sales continue, and new products are coming. Oh, that was news by news from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. But yes, more Obama memorabilia coming at us every day.
When Barack Obama announced his candidacy for president, he did so in the same place where Abraham Lincoln announced his candidacy. When Barack Obama was writing his inaugural address, he read the speeches of Abraham Lincoln. When Barack Obama took the oath of office to become the 44th president of the United States, his hand was on Abraham Lincoln's Bible. Surely, our new president has no more important role model than Abraham Lincoln. Now, from the Mintland Mint, the first Obama collectible that's more than just another Obama collectible, the Barack Obama What Would Lincoln Do Talking Calendar. Every day brings a new reminder of what Abraham Lincoln was doing on that very day.
Today in 1862, President Lincoln met with his Secretary of War.
Today in 1861, President Lincoln had dinner with leading senators.
Imagine each day brings a new dose of inspiration from the man who inspires our new president. The What Would Lincoln Do talking calendar has a digital readout so you can clearly see the day and date, and a hefty 3-inch speaker so you can hear each day's Lincoln moment from virtually across the room. But wait, there's more, much more. The What Would Lincoln Do talking calendar is completely searchable. It's the first interactive talking calendar ever made available as part of a presidential inauguration promotion. As far as we know, whenever you want to know what would Lincoln do, just press the talk button and ask,
what would Lincoln have for lunch?
Two of Lincoln's favorite foods were fruit salad and sorghum cake.
Should I go straight to college or, like, take a year off?
Lincoln never went to college, and he studied law at home.
Cool. Thanks, talking calendar.
If the What Would Lincoln Do calendar was sold in stores, you'd pay $60 to $70 for this amazing high-quality appliance. But there aren't any stores, so you can only order this souvenir that's so much more than a souvenir through this special TV offer, or online, or out of a booth at selected farmers markets. Imagine, just like President Obama, when you're faced with a big decision, you can ask,
what would Lincoln do?
What would Lincoln do?
Yo, what would, Lincoln do?
But this special TV offer can't last forever. Soon, this remarkably accurate talking calendar will be sold in stores.
Lincoln turned to new gadgets to help win the war.
You could be like Senator Barack Obama and spend hundreds of hours and hundreds of dollars buying books and doing other kinds of Lincoln research. Or you can be like President Obama and save money to help our economy. Plus, if you order the amazing What Would Lincoln Do talking calendar within the next 10 minutes, it may even go out in today's shipping.
Lincoln wrote, "This habit of uselessly wasting time is the whole difficulty."
So act now.
Dial 1-844-ABE-TALKS. Have your credit card ready. Our New Delhi representatives are notoriously impatient. That's 1-844-ABE-TALKS. For faster service, dial quicker. Or order online. To find out our web address, call 1-844-ABE-TALKS.
Lincoln said, "Things may come to those who wait, but only the things left by those who hustle."
Call now.
So bad, you know the summer's coming soon, though the interstate is choking under salt and dirty sand, and it seems the sun is hiding from the moon. Your daddy told you when you were a girl the kind of things that come to those who wait. So give it a rest, girl. Take a deep breath, girl. Meet me at the Bay State tonight. And the snow is coming down on our New England town, and it's been falling all day long. What else is new? What could I do? I wrote a valley winter song for you. In late December can drag a man down. You feel it deep in your gut. Short days and afternoons spent pottering around in a dark house with the windows painted shut. Remember New York, staring outside as reckless winter made its way from Staten Island to the Upper West Side, widen out our streets along the way. And the snow is coming down on our New England town, and it's been falling all day long. What else is new? What can I do? But sing this valley winter song I wrote for you.
This is Le Show, and hey, it's winter here, you know. It rained in L.A. a little bit, misted, spat a little bit, you know, brr. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're
so sorry.
Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich appeared on WLS AM radio in Chicago, station which has offered him a job as a talk show host if he'll only quit the governorship. Hey, that's a good... Why didn't anybody offer George Bush a talk show? Too late now. And Blagojevich, during his appearance on the station, apologized... No. He apologized for the profanity in the tapes that he was wiretapped, saying he wanted to sell the Obama senator seat for the highest... He apologized for working blue, ladies and gentlemen. Other public officials apologizing. The mayor of Portland, Oregon, admits lying about his relationship with a teenager. Sam Adams, however, insists that the former intern was an adult when their relationship turned physical. Adams first met Beau Breedlove. Excuse me. Any writers in town think they could come up with a name as corny as that for your intern squeeze, Beau Breedlove. When Adams first met him when Breedlove was a 17-year-old aide at the Oregon legislature, says Portland Tribune. Adams says Breedlove was 18, the legal age of consent in Oregon, when they had a sexual relationship in the summer of 2005. Adams, who was openly gay, dismissed reports of that same-sex relationship during his recent mayoral campaign as a nasty smear. I should have been honest at the time when this first surfaced in 2007, he now says. But I didn't believe that given the way that rumors were being spread about whether I had broken the law by having sex with a minor, that people would believe me. That's a good one. I had to lie because I didn't think people would believe the truth. Nice. Now he says, I want to publicly acknowledge the mistake I've made. I want to apologize for it. In the past, I characterized my relationship with Beau Breedlove as purely non-sexual. That is not true. I should have been honest at the time. I lied because I thought people wouldn't believe me if I told the truth. My hat's off to you, sir. That is damn good. And I like your beer. Tom Hanks says he's sorry he told FoxNews.com that Mormons who supported California's Proposition 8, the gay marriage ban, were un-American. Everyone has a right to vote their conscience. Nothing could be more American. To say members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints who contributed to Proposition 8 are un-American creates more division when the time calls for respectful disagreement. No one should use un-American, lightly or in haste. I did. I should not have, says Hanks. Credit card and debit card data breaches are nothing new. Major precautions have been put in place to stop them. Not only do they persist, they continue to be more widespread than ever. This week, news broke of what may be the largest breach of debit and credit card information in history. Heartland Payment Systems, based in Princeton, New Jersey. Princeton, New Jersey is the Heartland? Where's the Spleenland, then? It's the payment processor involved, Heartland is. They serve more than 250,000 businesses. They're not saying which were affected. The CFO, Robert Baldwin, says it wouldn't be fair to mention any particular one client, according to the Washington Post. Yeah, and they wouldn't believe you if you did, either. Try that. What he is saying is that more than 100 million transactions go through Heartland's platforms, i.e., computers, each month, and the number of accounts affected could be even higher than that, though they're not sure how many were affected. Heartland has created a website to give further information about the incident. It does downplay the extent of the damage. The stolen information included names, credit, debit card numbers, and expiration dates were obtained through malicious software installed in Heartland's networks. Heartland says it doesn't know how the software got there, how long it was in place, or how many accounts it compromised. Heartland is not offering anything to victims. That's putting the heart in Heartland. One from the Heartland, ladies and gentlemen. Not free credit monitoring or identity theft protection, which is traditionally handed out after a data breach. PIN numbers and social security numbers were not stolen, so the company doesn't think it warrants any compensation. Heartland apologizes for any inconvenience this situation has caused, the company does say on its breach website. That's a big Heartland. The 56th inaugural swearing-in ceremony was the largest event in Washington, D.C. history, says the congressional committee which ran it in a statement. It deeply regrets that some ticket holders to the ceremonies were not able to get to their ticketed sections, primarily in the purple and blue zones. You guys were warned about the purple tickets, weren't you? Oh, no, those were the pills. The number of tickets issued for these sections was based on historic precedent and calculations of the number of guests that could safely be accommodated in each area. Many of the problems appear to have been due to the unprecedented crowds. That's right, their excuse is, we couldn't let you in, there were too many of you. And they also blame a large flow of unticketed people toward the U.S. Capitol. Okay. But they're sorry. They're sorry that you spent all that money and went through all that hassle to get to Washington to get turned away. Try it again in 4 years, will you? The former Detroit Lions coach, now the Chicago Bears defensive coordinator, Rod Marinelli, has apologized for saying goodbye, ladies, to three male Detroit sports writers at the Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama. Please accept my personal apology for the words I used in response to the request of a few Detroit reporters covering the Senior Bowl, Marinelli said in a statement. In attempting to avoid being interviewed, I understand that my comment was inappropriate and wrong. I want to assure you that the tone in this choice of words will not occur again in response to questions from reporters. The apology came after a complaint to the NFL from the Association for Women in Sports Media. What Coach Marinelli said caused concern to me and many other members, said President Jenny Carlson. Used as an insult, such words help foster a hostile work environment for women in sports media. Unquote. A Dallas school whose girls basketball team beat another team 100-0 has apologized, calling its win shameful and a victory without honor. The Covenant School of Dallas also asked to forfeit the game against the Dallas Academy. The Dallas Academy is a school that specializes in teaching children with learning problems. The Dallas Academy's athletic director, Jeremy Civello, said the Covenant team kept its first string players in the game almost until the end and didn't let up until the 100th point in the fourth quarter. In a statement, the board chair and head of the Covenant school said they formally apologized to the other school Thursday morning. It is shameful and an embarrassment that this happened, the statement said. We humbly apologize. And Rohan Sippy, Rohan Sippy, the director of the controversial Bollywood film Chandani Chowk to China, has publicly apologized for mentioning Lord Buddha's birthplace as India in the movie. I did not want to hurt the sentiments of the Nepali people, Sippy was recorded as saying. Earlier, anti-India protest erupted in the streets of Kathmandu over a scene in the movie mentioning that Buddha was born in India. Students in Kathmandu burned tears and wrapped street dogs with the Indian flag as a mark of protest. Didn't throw shoes, though. So he's sorry for saying Buddha was born in India. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. A copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Oh, you know what? Before we do that, I just have to... I know, that's bad radio right there. Barack Obama had a meeting, President Obama had a meeting with Republicans this week in which he said, you have to, if we've got to get along, but to get along, you have to stop listening to Rush Limbaugh, which may seem gratuitous, except that Limbaugh had gotten a lot of public notice earlier in the week for saying that I hope President Obama fails. As I say, he got a lot of public attention for that. I hope President Obama fails. Now, the headlines sort of stopped there. But Limbaugh went further. And we'll hear that moments from now here on the show. Yes, it wowed back up. That's good radio.
I were your woman,
if you were my woman,
and you were my man. She tears you down, darling. Says you're nothing at all.
Nothing at all.
But I'll pick you up, darling.
Pick you up when you fall.
When she lets you fall. You're like a diamond.
Shining.
But she treats you like glass. Yet you beg her to love you. But me, you don't ask. If I were your woman,
you were my woman.
My friends, on the radio program today, I said I hoped President Obama fails. We didn't have time on the broadcast. As you know, I only have 3 hours, and the breadth and depth of the Limbaugh worldview far exceeds that paltry ration of minutes. We didn't have time for me to complete my list of hopes as we enter this era of hope. So now, here, exclusive to online subscribers to the Platinum Rush Bucket, here goes. I hope Teddy Kennedy's head falls completely off, and I hope Carolyn Kennedy catches it. I hope Michelle Obama trips on the hem of the next long gown she puts on and falls into the arms of Senator David Vitter. I hope Sasha and Malia flunk out of Sidwell Friends. I hope Joe Biden's hair plugs start falling out from stress. I hope Barney Frank takes the wrong companion to the next gay pride parade and wakes up the following morning on the Boston docks, dazed and bleeding. I hope Tim Geithner gets confirmed as Secretary of the Treasury just before we learn that he's also been head of an identity theft ring and he hasn't reported the income on that either. I hope Sasha and Malia flunk out of Washington, D.C. public school. I hope that Obama's mother-in-law snores loudly. Hell, I hope she sleepwalks and snores. I hope Rahm Emanuel has one of his famous swearing episodes, loses complete control, and calls Sasha and Malia a couple of baby hoes. I hope that President Obama is playing basketball in the White House gym when the next terrorist attack occurs, not if, my friends, when, and that at that exact moment he sinks a three-point shot. I hope that Howard Dean goes back to practicing medicine and loses his first patient on the operating table. I hope Harry Reid goes back to drinking. I hope Nancy Pelosi takes up drinking. And finally, my friends, I hope that Al Franken succeeds in weaseling his way into the United States Senate after all, which will drive that body's approval rating even lower, below his old radio ratings, if such a thing is mathematically possible. And, my friends, I hope that on his first visit to the White House, he gets a little too toked up and puts a move on Sasha and Malia. That, from the Limbaugh Institute of Platinum Online Content, is what I hope for the Democrats. Find out what I hope for the Republicans. Click the box to sign up for Titanium Content.
Yeah, we didn't have the budget to sign up for that, so I guess you'll hear that on your own. But now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm, won't you? Hey, you know, you do what you can on public radio. It's public radio. See what I'm saying?
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
This is cute. You'll like this. An insecticide used to fumigate termite-infested buildings is a strong greenhouse gas that lives in the atmosphere nearly 10 times longer than previously thought, according to research at UC Irvine, formerly UC Irving. Sulfuryl fluoride, UCI chemists discovered, stays in the atmosphere at least 30 to 40 years and perhaps as long as 100 years. Prior studies estimated an atmospheric lifetime as low as 5 years. Grossly underestimating the global warming potential. The fact that it exists for decades, coupled with evidence that levels have nearly doubled in the last 6 years, concerns the authors of the study. They were the same people who discovered that chlorofluorocarbons in aerosol cans damage the ozone layer. Sulfuryl fluoride has a long enough lifetime in the atmosphere we just cannot close our eyes. The level in the atmosphere is rising fast, and it doesn't seem to disappear very quickly. Well, I think closing your eyes would be good defense, then. No, I see what they're saying. They're being metaphorical. Kilogram for kilogram, sulfuryl fluoride is about 4,000 times more efficient at carbon than carbon dioxide in trapping heat. Well, then, its climate impact in California each year equals that of carbon dioxide emitted from about 1 million vehicles. About 60% of the world's sulfuryl fluoride use occurs in California. It blocks a wavelength of heat that would otherwise easily escape the Earth. The only place where the planet is able to emit heat that escapes the atmosphere is in the region that sulfuryl fluoride blocks, said a chemistry professor on the team. If we put something with this blocking effect in that area, then we're in trouble, and we are putting something in there. They worry that emissions will increase as new uses are found for the chemical, especially given the ban on methyl bromide, an ozone-depleting pesticide. Sulfuryl fluoride emissions are not regulated, as is methyl bromide, though officials do consider it a toxic contaminant. The insecticide is pumped into a tent that covers a termite-infested structure. When the tent is removed, the compound escapes into the atmosphere. The researchers believe a suitable replacement should be found, one with less global warming potential. Or we should just learn to make friends with the termites. A four-week expedition to explore the deep ocean southwest of Tasmania has revealed new species of animals and more evidence of impacts of increasing carbon dioxide on deep-sea corals. A collaborative voyage of U.S. and Australian researchers set out to search for life deeper than any previous voyage in Australian waters, says Dr. Ron Thresher. We also gathered data to assess the threat posed by ocean acidification and climate change on Australia's unique deep-water coral reefs. Our sampling documented the deepest known Australian fauna, including a bizarre carnivorous sea squirt, sea spiders, and giant sponges. Ladies, think about how that would help your housework. And previously unknown marine communities dominated by gooseneck barnacles and millions of round, purple-spotted sea anemones. They're on the anemone list right now, as a matter of fact. All of these new species are located more than 2,000 meters below the surface. Vast fields of fossil corals were discovered below 1,400 meters, dating to more than 10,000 years old. I don't know how that can be. The Earth is only 6,000. The samples collected will be used to determine the periods over the last millions of years when reefs have existed south of Tasmania. They will also provide ancient climate data that contribute to models of regional and global climate change. And not only has the average global temperature increased in the past 50 years, but the hottest day of the year has shifted nearly 2 days earlier, according to a new study by scientists from the University of California, Berkeley, and Harvard. Just as human-generated greenhouse gases appear to be the cause of global warming, human activity may also be the cause of the shifts in the cycle of seasons. one of the authors. We see 100 years where there is a very natural pattern of variability, and then we see a large departure from that pattern at the same time as global mean temperatures start increasing, which makes us suspect there's a human role here, says one of the authors. And more trees are dying in the West Forest as the region warms, a trend that could ultimately spell widespread change for mountain landscapes from the Sierra to the Rockies. Scientists who examined decades of tree mortality data from research around the West found the death rate had risen as average temperatures in the region increased by more than 1 degree Fahrenheit. The death rates have more than doubled over the last few decades in old-growth forests across the western United States. In a wide variety of trees at different elevations and trees of all sizes and among major species, wherever we looked, mortality rates are increasing, says one of the authors. The award-winning News of the Warm, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Challenge journalists who may be listening to this broadcast to find out where those White House Bibles are now. Who has them? Come on, guys. You can do it. The search for the White House Bible this week on The Discovery. That concludes this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, on neither form of satellite radio because they merged, because mergers are good. Around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com whenever you want it. Available as a free download to members at www.audible.com/LeShow and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like more Obama-bilia being for sale. If you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Thanks also to the folks who showed up this week for the final Songs of the Bushmen show. I'll stop bothering you about that now, and I'll just start bothering you about Chris, Michael, and Harry, coming soon. The email address for this broadcast and playlists of the music heard here on, just some of what you can get your hands on, your digital hands on, at harryshearer.com. A tip of the LeShow chapeau to the San Diego, Chicago, Pittsburgh, and Hawaii desks. And thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.